wonderful Thanksgiving. I know we did. It's also interesting, and this is the time where, you know, we do, and there's deals now, or just, you know, you have time to get shipping or all of that. And I'm actually hard to shop for because all I ask anybody for is board games. And they have gone up quite a bit, so I'm like, I'm not sure I'm going to get any of those, so I don't know what I'm going to get, but I always liked playing games. And my family, we grew up, we were playing mostly card games, and I liked playing card games, but I kind of tried to beg people to play the board games that we had, which all I knew of growing up was like Risk, Monopoly, that's about it, you know, Clue. That was like all you had, you know. And so I always try to beg every year, like on my birthday or something, like, we're going to play Risk. It was like the most strategic game I could think of. I really enjoyed it. And so that's kind of like how I grew up. Then somebody introduced me, like, oh, there's this game called like Axis and Allies. It's a little bit longer, a little bit more strategic. It's like, oh, this is cool. But then, like, that's kind of still all I knew. So I just thought this is all there is. And then there was like this game-changing moment for my life when we were playing with this one family and they played this game. It was called like Seven Wonders, and it's just a different game. And I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And then I was like, I've never heard of this. And then this friend of mine, he just looked at me. He goes, oh, there's like tons of games. He's like, I own like 300 games. I was like, there's 300 games? I was like, what's that? And my wife is literally like, please stop talking. And then this guy said this thing. He let me know something that like literally changed my life. Not like, you know, but it did. He said, there's this thing called BoardGameGeek.com. And I was like, what? And he told me, yeah, you go there and you can find literally thousands of games like this that exist on this website that you can then find out where to buy them. You can they're reviewed and all these things. And I was like, this is amazing. So I went on and I was just like, wow. So every year, that's where my list comes from, is BoardGameGeek.com. I find out what's trending and I go, oh, that game looks fun. And I see if anybody will buy it for me. But it was definitely this changing moment when this guy let me know this exists. And today what we're going to be taking a look at is kind of the game-changing moment of when God makes himself known. And so we're going to be looking at, we're kind of opening this Advent series, and what we're looking at this particular Advent is kind of, what does it mean for like the incarnation, which is really God becomes man. And so today we're going to be looking at John chapter 1. And so just as you, if you're turning there on your devices or on your Bibles, John chapter 1, this is the Apostle John, the disciple John is writing this, and he's kind of writing, honestly, more to kind of a Greek context. So even when he's talking about the word here, he's really just talking about Jesus. He's talking about God in a way that those people would understand. It's not necessarily how you and I would choose to describe, but that's okay. That's who he's talking about as we read all of this. So let's read this and see what we find. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. There was a man sent from God, whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light, that all may believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light. The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. John bore witness about him and cried out, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me ranks before me,' because he was before me. For from his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God. The only God who is at the Father's side, he has made him known. So what we see here in this passage as John is talking about this is he's trying to get people to understand here is God, the Word. God has always existed. Everything that does exist exists from God. Right? He's painting a picture here of the creator of everything. Right? This ultimate light. This is God. That there is no darkness. Darkness cannot overcome. He's painting a poetic, beautiful, majestic picture of who God is. And it's this awesome kind of out there picture. Right? But the interesting thing is here's this God. He's awesome. He's big. He's beautiful. And yet the interesting thing is he says, okay, in this passage we see he's saying, but then he comes and he dwells among us and he makes himself known. Those last verses we read there say that no one has seen God, but that God has now made himself known. That's what it's saying there. It's saying God decided, I'm the only one who's seen me. I'm the only one who really knows me. And I will come so that you can know me. I will make myself known to you is what John is describing here of what God has done. Now, I think this is maybe something, yeah, I've kind of heard this, but I just want us to dwell on this for a moment because this is not actually that typical when it comes to people's thoughts or beliefs from other religions or other walks of life that think about kind of God. The first part of here being like, oh, there's a creator God, or there's a powerful being, or there's this kind of thing. This is not necessarily that unusual, right? People believe in that. There's a God up there or higher power or something like that. That's not that unusual. But the difference is that I think a lot of people and a lot of other things, walks of life, is that when we think of a God or a higher power, it's unknowable. It's just a higher power, a supreme being that's there that maybe you're serving, maybe you're trying to follow in some capacity, but you don't think you can know that being. You don't think you can know that God. And there's like, how would you? You're down here. There's some God and powerful thing up there. And so how would you know anything about what it is like? How would you know anything about that being? And so John describes this beautiful passage of who God is. And then he's saying, but this God has come to us to reveal himself to us so that we might know him. This is, I think, really impactful and important because it does a lot about how we see who God is. See, because if you don't get this concept that God came here so that we could know him, then if we're kind of operating from a thought process, whether consciously or unconsciously, that God is so big and so up there that he's completely unknowable, then you don't try to come to know him. Right? Because it's just he's just up there. He's too great. He's too powerful. He's too majestic for me to understand. And so what's the point of even bothering to understand him or get to know him? He's just a God that maybe I'll try to serve in some capacity. And yet what we see here is that God says, no, I have come to make my dwelling among you, and I have come, and I am making myself known to you. I think this is important because what it is we serve a God. We believe in a God who's not just up there powerful and majestic and mighty. While he is all those things, he is a God who's also said, I want you to know me. I want to be known by you. It's not just enough for me to be here and all of that. I've actually gone through a lot for this to happen. And as we read this, part of when he says God became flesh and dwelt among us, really what it is God says, okay, I'm going to kind of divest myself of divinity and actually become a man. And as we read and prayed through and sang, suffer and die and all of these things, all so that we might know him and receive the grace that he has. This is the God that we serve. This is the God that we believe in. He's one who says, no, I really want to be known by you. Not just know about, but to be known by you. And there's a great difference there that we understand. We can know about somebody, but there's a very big difference between knowing somebody. You know, we all know about people you see on TV or celebrities or these kinds of things, but unless you are their friend, you probably don't actually know them at all. And I think the problem is sometimes we treat God more like a celebrity that we know about, that maybe we follow on Instagram or something, like, oh yeah, I saw something, like the pastor said something today, I guess that's something cool. But do we actually know God? And I think there is a difference here. And the beautiful thing about what God is he's done all the work so that we might know him. He's the one who said, I will come. I am the only one who has seen God. And I will come down and become a man so that I can relate with you and be here for you and show you who I am. And talk to you about what does it mean to know me? How you can know me? So first we just see this reality of God desires for us to know him. That is a part of why he became a man, was so that he could reveal himself to us. And so if you're sitting there wondering, can I know God? The answer is yes, through Jesus, you can. And I want to encourage you that that's where we are. Now, the other part of this is that just because God makes himself available to us, just because he has come to us, just because he's come to earth and suffered and died and lived and done all those things, just because the knowledge of him is available to us does not actually mean that we will avail ourselves of that knowledge and actually know God. Right? That's not necessarily there. One of the things that I find interesting is in this whole passage here where he talks about how he came, but people didn't recognize, they didn't know who he was, and he came to his own people, which means he came to the Israelites, right? He came to the people of God, the people who had the Old Testament. They had the law that was revealed through Moses. They had worshiped God. They had sacrifices to God. They're the people who are waiting for the promised Messiah, who Jesus is. He comes to these people, and they don't know him. Right? So here he comes. Jesus is like, here I am. And they look at him and like, you're not him. We don't know you. We don't get it. And actually, the people who miss him the most are actually the religious leaders, kind of the experts on the law, which was the revelation of God to his people. So God reveals himself in the Old Testament in the law, saying, here's a way to follow me and to live for me and to hopefully that you can understand a bit of who I am, right? God gives the law to his people, and the experts of the law, in the New Testament, are the biggest people who do not see God and do not understand who he is. So that when Jesus is revealed, they're like, this is not God. And they actually lead the charge in seeing Jesus become crucified. And we might think, like, well, how does this happen? Right? How do the people who've been studying God's words in the Old Testament, studying the law, pouring over it day and night. This is all they were really doing. This was their profession. They're studying the law. How do they miss God? Wouldn't they know God? But clearly they didn't. And I think one of the interesting things here is that there is a difference, again, between just knowing about God, knowing maybe rules or regulations or things that supposedly are the things we have to do, and knowing the heart of God and knowing who God is. See, because they were looking for something very different from their Messiah. They were looking for something very different from God. And when God shows up and begins to live the way he did and show his life and show his heart the way that he did not fit in their box. It did not fit in their understanding of who God was supposed to be. And so when Jesus starts teaching and preaching and doing these things, they did not get it. And so when it says here, his own did not receive him, they did not see him, they did not get it because they did not understand the heart of who God is. See, Jesus constantly comes, and even in the Sermon on the Mount, we get this very kind of whole sermon where Jesus really portrays this, and he's giving the heart of God in the Sermon on the Mount, where he's saying, hey, here's the law that I gave you, and here's really how you messed it up. Here's how you misunderstood what I was trying to get at. And he constantly says things like, you have heard it said this, but I tell you this. And Jesus actually comes and he's trying to make himself known in a way that we could grasp and understand. But he doesn't just do it with words, he does it with actions and everything, where he's constantly, if you look through all of the New Testament, right, or the whole Gospels, almost every miracle that Jesus does is preceded by these words. He had compassion on them, and so he healed them. See, it even says it here. It says that with Jesus came grace and truth. It says that with Jesus we receive grace upon grace, that we have seen the glory of God, but with Jesus comes grace and truth. This is our God. And he reveals himself in a way to make himself known in a way that we cannot ignore. Because he says, here I am. I am God, and I am for you, and I love you, and I love the least of these. He flips the kingdom idea on its head, where he's saying the greatest is actually the least, and the least is the greatest. He reveals himself in so many ways and capacities, and he's saying, guys, this is my heart. This is who I am, and I want you to know me. I want you to know who I am. I want you to know my heart for you, for all of humanity, and the grace and the love and the truth and the peace and the hope and the joy that I have in me for all of you. I want you to know that. He's not just a distant God. He's not just a judgmental father or a judgmental being who's just waiting up there to punish us or to judge us on our activities. No, he is a God who said, my heart is for you. And I have come to save you. I have come to redeem you. I have come to show you my love and compassion and mercy and grace. And he wants us to know that. He wants us to know his heart. He wants us to be in a relationship with him in a way that we could say, I know who my God is, and he's wonderful. And he's beautiful, and he's marvelous. See, it's possible to study the Bible, but still not know God. It's possible to study the laws and the rules and all these things, but somehow still miss the heartbeat of God. The Pharisees did it. People today still do it. But God is saying, I am here so that you might know me. I'm here that you might experience me and come to understand the beautiful nature of who I am. Part of the reason that this can be difficult is that it says here that with Jesus comes grace and truth. Part of the truth that comes with Jesus is what Jesus says. He says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Part of the reality is there is no amount of effort, good deed, or works that we could ever do to achieve the love of Christ. There is nothing that we can do to earn salvation. And that is actually a really positive thing, but for some of us, it's a challenging thing because you have to just recognize the truth that Jesus brings with him. That is, you and I are completely dependent on the grace and mercy of God. And we have to just face that. But as we face that, we get to know God in a way that goes, wow, I had nothing to offer, and you offered everything. I had nothing to give, but you've given everything. And it opens us to experience the grace and mercy and beauty of who God is in a way that we cannot without receiving that truth. I love that this is our God. I think part of my question for us today as we ponder this, as we think through this, as we think through this Advent season, part of my question for us is, do you know this God? Do you know the God of grace upon grace? Do you know the God of mercy and love and compassion? Do you know the God who gave up heaven for you? And again, not just in a theoretical mental space, but here in your gut, in your heart, do you know him? Have you received his grace and truth? Have you received his presence in your life? Or are we just kind of going through the motions, knowing things about him, but not truly knowing him? Now, knowing him is a journey. There's a progression. There's a constantly getting to know him. It's just like in any relationship. I'm married, so that's what I think of when I come to this. But I knew my wife 14 years ago, but I know her so much better now than I did 14 years ago. Even with any friends we have, it's the same kind of thing. When you first get to know somebody, you know them, but as you journey with them, you get to know them better. You get to see their heart more. You get to feel their compassion for you more. There's a journey here, but there always comes a point where you move from knowing about to actually knowing and going, oh, I get it. I just want to read these words. This is from Philippians chapter 3. This is Paul, and he's talking, and he talks a lot about all the awesome things he's had in life and experience. But then he just says in chapter 3, verse 7, he says, but whatever gain, whatever good things that I had, I count it as loss for the sake of Christ. Indeed, I count everything as loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord. For his sake, I have suffered the loss of all things and count them as rubbish in order that I may gain Christ. Are we there? And I don't ask that question in a judgmental, guilt-trippy way. I'm just asking it in a self-reflective way of, for your life, with where you are at with Jesus, can you say, indeed, I count everything as loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Jesus? Is that where we're at? Because Paul, that was his experience. Many other people through history, that's their experience, that nothing in this world is worth, stands up to, is anything in the even conversation is comparative to the capacity of knowing Jesus. That's what incarnation is about. He has made himself known. But do you want to know him? Do you want to experience the richness of his grace and mercy and truth? Do you want to dive into the depths of what does it mean to know our God? Because he is knowable. And he is love, and he is for you, and he is gracious. And there is nothing better than knowing him. But he will not force himself upon you. See, as we enter into this Advent season, as we maybe on your own or here, as we sing carols and things of joy to the world and all this kinds of stuff, as you know Jesus, does that fill your heart with joy and peace and truth? Because if it doesn't, no judgment, but if it doesn't, may I encourage you that there's more to know? That if you cannot say that I consider everything a loss compared to knowing Christ, then I would just suggest to you that maybe you have more to know. You have more to discover in the heart of our God than you have yet to discover. I just want to encourage you this Advent season as we come, as we celebrate that he came and made himself known, that he will come again and that he will make all things new, that it's not just about the future. He's also come to bring us so many amazing things right now. And you can know him and experience those things to a degree right now if you desire. But the question is, do you want to know? Do you want to experience him? Do you want the knowledge of him to be worth more than anything else? Or do you want to hold on to other things? That's sort of the question before us. So I'm going to invite the worship team on up. Just want to kind of invite us to just pray for a minute. What we've talked about today is probably not new information for most of us. Not necessarily mind-blowing information. But I want us to just wrestle with our own hearts. Do you know Jesus? Maybe you've never known him before. Maybe you're sitting here and you said, I really never understood who he is. And I just want to invite you, if that's where you're at, to just ask him to say, would you make yourself known? I want to know you. Maybe you're here and you're saying, I've followed God for many years. I have known about God for a long time, and I have a part of him that I do feel like I know who he is, but the knowledge of him is not that worthwhile to me. It doesn't fill my life with love and joy and peace and grace and just his presence. I could take it or leave it if that's where you're at. I also just want to invite you to just pray and say, God, I want to know you. If this is true, that you are making yourself known, if this is true, that you are grace upon grace, that you are glorious and majestic and mighty and awesome, if this is true, and I haven't experienced that in a way where I could honestly say that you are worth everything to me, that just knowing you is the surpassing greatness. I just want to invite you to ask and say, reveal yourself to me.